Okay, good afternoon, everybody. Got four papers to discuss with you this afternoon relating to matters from the Interpretations Committee. First off is paper number 12, which is the IFRIC update from the May meeting. And there are just two items I want to just flag for your attention in here. The first one relating to IFRS 5, and that begins on the second page. Now, this the Interpretations Committee has been discussing quite a number of IFRS 5 related issues, and there are five described here. There are actually 11 altogether that they've been looking at, and we're planning to bring to you a paper next month which will present to you an overview of those various issues and to seek your guidance on how the Interpretations Committee should proceed with those, given that a number of their discussions on these items have not led to a conclusion as to what the answer should be in some of these issues. So I just wanted to flag that one for you as one that we'll be bringing to you at a future meeting. And the second item I wanted to flag was on it'd be the fourth page, and it's to do with IS 16, property, plant and equipment. And this is to do with an issue that the committee has discussed on a few occasions before, relating to how to account for the net proceeds received during the testing phase of the construction of an item of property, plant and equipment. And some concerns that have been identified with the amount of proceeds that are being deducted in some circumstances as being quite material. And so the Interpretations Committee has tentatively decided to develop an interpretation on this matter. They are continuing to discuss that. The focus is to look at whether they can clarify or give greater understanding to the meaning of testing, and in particular the meaning of functioning properly, that is a term used within IS 16 in that context. And so once the Interpretations Committee has reached general agreement on the context of that interpretation, we'll bring you a paper setting out their technical conclusions and asking for your formal input on that. Those were just the two things that I did want to flag for you today, but happy to take any questions on those or any other matters in IFRIC update.
Okay.
No? Okay, thanks. Then the next item we turn to then is agenda paper 12A, which Hannah is going to lead us through.
Thanks. Yes, agenda paper 12A sets out the Interpretation Committee's proposals for a draft interpretation on IS 21, our standard on foreign exchange. The issue it addresses is which exchange rate you should use to translate a foreign currency transaction on initial recognition of that transaction. And the particular circumstances is when you have consideration that's paid or received in advance of the transaction, and that advance consideration leads to the recognition of a non-monetary prepayment asset or deferred income liability. The relevant guidance in IS 21 is that you use the exchange rate at the date of the transaction. And the date of the transaction is defined as the date that the transaction first qualifies for recognition in accordance with IFRS. Now, our outreach indicated that current practice in respect of revenue foreign currency transactions is mixed, with some using the exchange rate at the date of the recognition of the advance consideration, and others using the exchange rate at the subsequent date of recognition of the related revenue. What the Interpretation Committee is proposing is that we'll use the spot exchange rate to translate your foreign currency asset, expense or income, so it's wider than just revenue transactions, on their recognition should be the earlier of the date of initial recognition of your non-monetary prepayment asset or non-monetary deferred income liability, or the date that the asset, expense or income is recognised in the financial statements. So in other words, we're looking at the exchange rate of the advance consideration in the majority of circumstances. And this approach treats the recognition of the advance consideration as part of the same transaction as the recognition of the related income, expense or asset. The primary reason why the Interpretations Committee has taken this approach and supports it is because they feel that it reflects the fact that once you've received your consideration in advance, you're no longer exposed to foreign exchange risk in respect of that sale or purchase transaction. One member of the Interpretations Committee has indicated their intention to vote against the draft interpretation, and this is because they think that in the absence of an explicit statement to the contrary, the draft interpretation could be read as implying that exchange differences on trade receivables and trade payable balances cannot be recognised in the same line item in the profit and loss as the foreign currency transaction. However, the Interpretations Committee as a whole thinks that the presentation of exchange differences arising on these monetary items is not relevant to the issue being addressed by the proposed interpretation. As noted in the agenda paper, in reaching general agreement on the technical matters, the Interpretations Committee also considered the interaction with other standards, including IFRS 15, and you'll see there's quite a lot of technical analysis in Appendix A to the paper. We're not proposing to include all that analysis in the actual standard interpretation or basis of conclusion itself, because we feel that what we're doing is interpreting IS 21. The Interpretations Committee has also considered what to do when the transaction is recognised in stages, the scope of the draft interpretation, and transitional arrangements. Before we move on to the due process aspects and the particular questions that are outlined on page 18 of the paper, do you have any comments on the technical matters that have been discussed by or considered by the Interpretations Committee?
I just had one question. You used this phrase in your TF, and I read it several times in a footnote and throughout the document, and I'm trying to wrap my head around it, maybe because this paper is quite long, but the statement that once you've received this advanced consideration, and it gives rise to a non-monetary prepayment or deferred income liability, you say that the entity is no longer exposed to foreign exchange risk. And then you say, in respect of the transaction. Is that the qualifier? Is that what you're really referring to? In other words, to say that you now received, you know, foreign currency, to say you no longer have exposure to foreign exchange risk doesn't make sense to me. What you're saying is it doesn't have foreign exchange risk with respect to that transaction.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. You've obviously still got Treasury decisions to be made for the foreign currency cash you've received, for example. But in terms of your transaction, you know now how much foreign currency.
I just wanted to make sure I had a meeting of the minds. Okay. Fine.
Any other questions? No?
Okay. Great. Should we move then on to the due process steps? They're summarised in Appendix A of the agenda paper, and we're also recommending the usual comment period of no less than 90 days for the draft interpretation. And just to remind you that on balloting the draft interpretation, if at least 10 members of the Interpretations Committee vote in favour of the draft and no more than 3 of the board members object, we'll publish the draft interpretation for public comment. The questions are set out on page 18 of the agenda paper. So firstly, do any of you intend to object to the release of the draft interpretation?
No.
Are you satisfied with the due process undertaking?
Yep.
Good. Do you agree with the comment period of no less than 90 days?
Yes.
Yep. And do you give us permission to ballot, please?
Well, okay.
Thank you very much.
No to the last one.
Yeah.
I must always come off insurance not from the beginning, I think.
Profit on the exhaustion caused by insurance.
Okay, our next paper is paper 12B, And this is coming back to you with the results of the comment letter analysis from an exposure draft that we published last August relating to IS 12. Now, June is going to take us through this, but I just wanted to let you know, of course, that this is June's first time presenting to the board. So please be nice to her in the usual way.
In August 2014, the ISB published the exposure draft, recognition of deferred capital assets for unrealized losses, narrow scope amendment to IS 12 to clarify the guidance on recognition of deferred tax assets for a debt instrument to measure their fair value. So it clarifies that unrealized loss on a debt instrument measure their fair value gives rise to a deductible temporary difference irrespective of the expected manner of recovery. An entity assesses the utilization of deductible temporary differences in combination with other deductible temporary differences. An entity's estimate of future taxable profit includes amounts from recovering assets for more than their carrying amounts. And an entity's estimate of future taxable profit excludes tax deductions resulting from the reversal of the deductible temporary differences. The ISB also proposed a limited retrospective application. It means that reallocation between retained earnings and other component of equity in the opening statement of financial position is not required. We received 68 comment letters on this exposure draft. Most respondents broadly agreed with the proposed amendment. However, there were some differing views on how to address the principles, so mainly about clarification. Some of the respondents thought the amendment should be simplified. The respondent thought that requested further clarification, and some other respondents did not support the proposed limited retrospective application. At the last meeting in March, the Interpretations Committee discussed an analysis of these comment letters and decided to propose that the ISB should proceed with this amendment, subject to some changes, some amendment to the proposed wording. However, some members of the Interpretations Committee expressed concerns or recommended some clarification about three items. The first one is about clarification of existence of deductible temporary difference. And the second one is related to concern about an entity recovering an asset for more than its carrying amount. In assessing probable future taxable profit. And the last issue is related to clarification of transition relief. On the basis of the step analysis in the agenda paper 12B, we made some changes to the proposed wording to reflect those concerns or recommendations. So they are summarized on the last page of this agenda paper. However, in this meeting, we are not asking the ISB to approve a specific wording or to give us specific comments on the wording. We will collect editorial comments later, not in the meeting. So the questions in this meeting we would like to ask are, does the ISB agree with the recommended revisions to the proposed amendment to IS 12? In response to the Interpretations Committee's recommendations? And does the ISB agree with the Interpretation Committee's recommendations about proceeding with this amendment?
We do?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
What? No. Mary. No, I thought we were voting by hand.
Not necessary.
Nothing. Full victory.
Okay, so
yes.
All agreed.
Yes.
Agreed.
Okay. Yep.
Thank you.
Paper 12C deals with a proposed narrow scope amendment to IFRS 8 operating segments clarifications which arise from the post-implementation review of IFRS 8. The post-implementation review of IFRS 8 identified six areas for further investigation, and we discussed the findings of those investigations and the staff recommendation at the May meeting. And at that meeting, you tentatively decided to amend IFRS 8 as explained in paragraph 9 of this paper. In today's paper, we propose a comment period of 120 days, with balloting beginning in Q3 and publication of the ED likely to be in Q4. We recommend that the proposals be applied retrospectively, and we also recommend that early application is permitted and that no exemption to IFRS 1 is required on first-time adoption. The due process steps are summarized in Appendix A. And the questions that we have for you today are on page 6. Do any ISB members intend to dissent from the proposed amendment?
I have a question that may lead me to dissent. Looking back at the paper in May, I think one of the recommendations about was about how many periods you had to restate. And I can't remember what our conclusion was. I had some concerns about us starting to weigh in and say, you don't have to restate information for all comparative periods presented, and giving specific relief. I think about saying you only had to restate one comparative period rather than determining it based on however many comparative periods you were restating. Subject to the outcome of that one, that may be something that causes me to dissent, not because I think in itself it's such a big deal, but I'm concerned about us starting to go down a route of saying you only have to do X periods rather than being flexible depending upon how many comparative periods an entity presents.
Well, I think IFRS requires that a single comparative period is
correct.
Presented, and we're not proposing to change anything to do with that.
Right.
What we are proposing is to affect the timing of when you present your comparative period for your interim reporting.
Okay.
And we're saying that if you do interim reporting, then the first time that you do an interim report, whether that is quarterly or half yearly, after a change in reorganization, at that time you should present the previous year's quarter in the quarterly or in the integral area that you use, whether that's half yearly or quarterly, at that time. So we're not asking them to give more information, just bring the timing of that information forward.
I had thought, and this was why I'm asking about it, because this is the one that I might dissent over, is we were going to say, and if you are presenting 2 years of comparative information, then you are only required to restate one of those comparative years in your annual statements.
And that's what we're saying. We're only asking for one.
Yes.
I agree with you, we only require one comparative, and therefore if you do the minimum that we require, you would only, present one, and we're not planning to change that. But I think I will dissent over that, specifically waiving the requirement to restate for all the comparative periods presented, because I don't think we should start stepping in on that point. How many comparatives do you present, unless it's exceptional circumstances?
If an entity were volunteering to present 2 years,
restatements, yes, but I'm saying in the primary financials they're presenting 2 years of comparative information.
And if they were doing that voluntarily for whatever reason, then we would not propose stopping them presenting.
I know we wouldn't stop them, but I think what you're saying is if you either elect or are required to present 2 years of comparatives, we, the ISB, are waiving a requirement to restate information related to the previous comparative period.
That's correct. That's what we did propose last time,
right.
And the vote was 10 in favor of.
And that's what I'm saying. I wanted to check that I was remembering it correctly. I apologize for having to check at the table. I didn't have time before. But on that basis, I think I will dissent.
Philippe, I don't have any problem in principle with what we're doing. It's just that looking back at the six, seven items we have in paragraph 9, There is one for which what you are asking us to vote on is not very specific. It's item F, where it says to require entities to explain the nature of blah, 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 more fully than is currently required. This notion of more fully isn't really standard setting. It is just an objective, a vague objective. I don't know how this translates really in terms of proposed requirements. Do you have, can you remind us a little bit what was exactly the outcome of this discussion, how we achieved this objective?
Yes, and I think that we will have to look at the wording of that when we take that in, but I think it will be a discussion about what the nature of the items are, what they represent. The objective of it was to enable investors themselves to allocate those reconciling items to individual business segments if they thought that was appropriate.
I think the objective is clear. It's just how far do we go to achieve this objective, and which kind of balancing act we have to do before a full detailed explanation or something which is more fully than today. And I think we don't really know exactly, we have not reached a conclusion as to the exact level of requirements here. So today I can give an agreement in principle, but I will say maybe it's subject to drafting of this point, which I don't know really where we're going.
Mary, you know, I feel quite strange that you descend for this, you know. So your idea is we should not be so strict, only when we're trying to hear it.
No, that is not my point.
Should be flexible.
No, my point is that I agree, and I think we're right, and I have no problem with the fact that we require only one comparative period. But I think if an entity either voluntarily or due to a regulatory requirement in another regime, and I'm familiar with the U.S., which requires two comparative periods, the regulator says, you've got to present two comparative periods. I don't think we should be stepping in and saying, if that happens, because we say so, you only have to restate 1 year,
no,
which is what we're doing here.
No. I remember a long, long time ago.
I think all we're saying here is we're adding an additional requirement that you.
I get the interim one, right?
We're not prohibiting anything else.
But we're saying because we say so, you can point to IFRS and say I am not required to restate the second year back because the ISB gave me specific relief.
Is this relief or is this what we always do?
No, it's. I think we are stepping in and specifically granting relief in these proposed amendments.
No, we're not granting relief, we're putting an extra requirement in.
Yeah.
I agree with Mary's characterization of it. I think it is.
I think we're doing two things. We're adding the acceleration of the interim information, but we are also, I think, specifically stepping in and saying, and by the way, okay, that's why I went back and looked at the paper.
Yeah.
And if that's what we're doing, I mean, we don't have to hash it out. I'm just putting up my hand and saying, if that's what we're doing, then I think I will dissent because I don't think we should be stepping in and crossing over regulatory requirements that may vary jurisdiction by jurisdiction.
Where do you see it in the list of
No, it's not in this paper. It's in last month's paper. That's
okay.
What I went back and looked at.
Okay.
And I did not think that last month's paper was drafted in that way. That wasn't the intention of drafting the paper.
50.
Okay, so I'll say subject to drafting and getting it resolved, I may be a dissenter.
Okay. Yeah.
Offline, okay?
Yes.
Yes, thank you. Okay.
Okay. And the next question is, do you agree with the recommendation that proposals are applied retrospectively? Yes?
Yes.
Yes.
Earlier application should be permitted? Yes?
Yes.
No specific relief for IFRS 1 first time?
No.
Yeah?
Correct, yeah.
Are you satisfied that the due process steps recorded in Appendix A are complied with?
No.
Yeah.
Yes.
And do you give permission to ballot the exposure draft?
Yep.
If you're doing this.
Shall we take a 5-minute break?
Definitely.